Back from a break, it's a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. Editor Nathan Mills joins me to talk about the Brendan Donovan trade that finally happened, the farm system rankings that have the Cardinals finally on the rise, and what it means that the Cardinals are changing channels on their TV situation. All of that and more in a brand new BPIB. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by editor Nathan Mills from the Post-Dispatch. Nathan, we got to make this quick. I got to pack. This will be my last, and these are like my last few hours in St. Louis.
Easy.
Well,
you said this will be my last, and I started to get a little nervous. I was like, why don't you just finish that sentence before you...
Final few hours? Yeah, I guess... In today's landscape for journalism, we got to be careful with last and some personal news. These are things that we need to I went overseas for a little bit and come back to wildness. Cardinals are on a new channel. Brendan Donovan's on a new team. Farm systems ranked number 2 by Baseball America. A lot happened in 70. I honestly have not. I'm not even kidding. I haven't entirely unpacked from just getting back from. I had a wonderful chance to go to Japan and to go to Tokyo and Kyoto in Japan. It was amazing, just an amazing trip. I did look for baseball wherever I could. I did get a Victory baseball. Very excited for that as a super nice. As a souvenir, and a vintage hat from Japan's big league, which was nice. It's been a whirlwind, both in our business, but also for the baseball team. Brendan Donovan traded as part of a 3-team deal that Chaim Bloom was able to orchestrate in part because of his, you know, relationship. Everybody has a trade relationship with Seattle. Jerry DePoto famously likes to trade, is itching to trade, can't help but like project a trade and really wanted Brendan Donovan. The Mariners right from the start were very aggressive, merged pretty early on. We wrote about it back in, you know, December, November, that the Mariners were a team emerging as a real pursuer of Brendan Donovan. And then Bloom's connection with the Rays and awareness that they could benefit from a third baseman that the Cardinals didn't need to further clog up their infield and pull off the 3-team deal that nets the Cardinals 3 players, including a top 100 prospect, 2 top 10 prospects for the Mariners system, and very big, cannot underscore this enough, 2 draft picks that just set them up huge, Nathan, in 2026.
Yeah, those draft picks are going to be a big deal. What, they got like 6 of the first 85 or something like that?
Correct, yeah. 6 of the first 85, 5 of the first 70-some, and all the money to go with it just allows for tremendous flexibility and strategy. When you talk about the size of the bonus purse, they currently are probably – I think they're going to project and probably finish with the second highest purse, which is quite something considering their first pick is 13th overall. Remember, they tumbled in the lottery and they were like, oh, but they're going to be able to take advantage of quantity in that. And that gives them, and this is no small thing, this gives them the ability to go under slot with some of those picks and then really bid high on some of the higher ceiling picks, perhaps later, even after the 10 rounds. Where the muscle of their bonus purse will allow them to compete in an NIL landscape. That's a new thing for baseball, as name, image, likeness, you know, basically college players can get more money for staying in college than going to Class A baseball. The Cardinals can be in a position to strategically compete with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've had, it's definitely a new era, right? And it's been made clear in multiple ways that this is a new era, but it kind of feels like an old, an old Cardinals trope, right? Like they're going to have a big bonus pool. They're going to spend to the bonus. They're going to be creative and crafty in how they use that to maximize their talent. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, Bloom's talked about since he got here, you know, about we're going to be in this rebuild process, in this re-whatever process, we're going to be talent collectors. We're going to have as many tickets as we possibly can in the lottery. And you know, we're going to hit on a couple of them. You know, we're not going to hit on all of them, but we're going to hit on some of them.
Yeah. The accumulation factor.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you look at it, you mentioned earlier, you know, when you left the country, the Cardinals were not the number two farm system in baseball. And when you got back, what I can only assume is a wormhole between here and Japan, all of a sudden it's the number two farm system in baseball, you know? So, you know, you throw even more lottery tickets in that system, it's going to feel pretty good. I mean, you know, you go from, I mean, they weren't bottom of the barrel last year, but they've risen significantly just in these trades since the trade deadline back in July. And, you know, number two, and you add a bunch more young talent to that. It feels like dark days, you know, all the veterans are gone. Beloved veterans, not just veterans, beloved veterans are gone. But like we've said it before, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's faint, but there's light.
Yeah, there's no guarantees with prospects, and Bloom repeatedly returned to that. And that's, you know, somewhat, it goes without saying, but it's good that someone says that, you know, and it is very much, you know, during the best podcast in baseball video version, you know, for me, I mentioned this, that for me, it's like a through the looking glass moment for the Cardinals. You know, for decades now, they've been the one packaging prospects to then acquire the known quantity, the guy with the all-star career. The list of that group is long, right? It's, you know, it's Scott Rolen, it's Jim Edmonds, you know, it's trading for Marcell Ozuna, it's trading for Jason Hayward, it's trading for Nolan Arenado, it's trading and then signing
Nolan Arenado before shipping him back out.
Yeah, Paul Goldschmidt, it's trading for Matt Holliday and then signing. It's all of those examples of where the Cardinals have been the one the package prospects to get the known quantity. Now the Cardinals have flipped the script for themselves, and you know, they've flipped their brand in a way, or in a lot of ways, to be the one now dealing those players to accumulate the younger players. I think, you know, one element of this that is really interesting to point out is that all of these prospects don't need to reach the majors to help the Cardinals in the majors. There is an abundance of prospects here, and the draft picks, let's include them in this conversation because those are going to turn up to be players, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's an abundance of players here that say they rise in the ranks, and, you know, the Cardinals draft the equivalent of their Ty Pete in the upcoming draft. Well, that's a number 10 prospect, top 10 prospect. No guarantee, lots of tools, lots of athleticism. No guarantee he gets to the majors. But the Cardinals could then trade that player to get the established player. The Cardinals have increased their inventory, not just for who they can get to the majors, but who they can acquire later for the majors. And that was a big part of this. That it's subtle, and again, there's no guarantee with it. But it's important to keep in mind that, you know, some of the deals that the Cardinals have made over the last 18 months or so does create a system that can be on the other end of that deal at some point.
Well, that's part of the depth, right? You know, right. Going from 18th or whatever they were, you know, to second, suddenly you're maybe that talent isn't necessarily MLB ready talent. Maybe some of that is never MLB talent, but you have enough assets in the system that now you can move them. That's one of the benefits of all the change here, right? It's like, you know, it's like I said, it seems dark, you know, but then you look at the other end of where you're at, and you know, yeah, some of these guys may not pan out, maybe none of these guys pan out, to be honest with you. But if
that would be a hit, if none of these guys pan out, that would be a disaster.
That would be rough. But if you know you've got enough in names,
not just rough, I think it'd be a disaster.
It would be an absolute nightmare of epic proportion. Yeah, but, you know, you've got enough guys with pedigrees, you've got enough guys with numbers next to their names in terms of, you know, rankings and things like that, that there's value in them at this point, even without that. So, I think that's a great point. And I think, you know, you and I talked during the video edition about the expansion of pro scouting with the Cardinals and how that has played a major role in talent acquisition, not with the draft picks, obviously, but with the guys that they've gone out and acquired in these trades. You know, I think that's a, this is a nod to those guys, you know, saying, hey, great work, at least right now, you know, you've jumped up quite a bit. You've done a great job.
Yeah. That was a big emphasis here. You know, you think about the last 15, 16 months of Heim Bloom overseeing player development, farm system, and then what he did in the first few months as president of baseball operations. You know, scouting has been a big part of that. And it's an area where he thought the Cardinals were understaffed and were asking a lot of individuals, while also using a model that, like, he wanted to shift. He wanted to increase the interaction between departments, and as opposed to having them all funnel in towards a decision, he wanted them to remain a part of inputting on a decision. You know, the Cardinals had a model that worked really well for them and kept them ahead of the game until really they weren't. And then as others teams caught up and surpassed them, as others teams spent far more on their scouting apparatus, on their development apparatus, on their just baseball operations infrastructure, they were doing it in better ways. And they were able to, drill down and expand and pretty much bring in a bigger amount of information to distill it down, as opposed to starting from, we want to focus on these guys and then get as much information as possible from these guys. The structure that Bloom wants has more people in it, more director level positions, has more oversight for a guy like Randy Flores, but perhaps less of the grind of the day-to-day grind of it, so that he can work at a higher level, work on bigger picture things, bring them together. And the bigger goal is more interaction. I mean, like the Cardinals, the example that I can kind of latch on to, Nathan, is like the Cardinals, they were ahead of their time with the draft and how they evaluated players and how they were able to take a whole lot of information and sort of find the signal out of the noise, and how they were able to compare players across all levels of performance in a way that then allowed them to arrive at a decision to the talent that they would get back or the cost that they could spend, all that stuff, right? But, you know, a few years ago, the Cardinals had a very narrow list of folks that they wanted to chase. These were the fits. These were the values. These were the players who went through their whole data evaluation, their scouting evaluation, and this is where the decision was to go after these guys. There was a far broader look this year, a lot more players, and they're in a different position, right? They're not targeting contention with these guys. They're more like, hey, we're wide open for business to trade. We need to look at the complete galaxy of players out there and get the best available for a future core. But they were able to look at they were encouraged to look at so many more players. And because they had expanded the staff and created more interaction between departments, they were able to do that and be more nimble and flexible with who they will see the results of this. But both sides have really have pros and cons. But the big pro is the fact that you just have more people look more coordinated and looking at more information to find the better talent. And then you have faith in the development program that you can provide, because the development program is part of the identifying.
Well, the development program has gotten a major overhaul too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's identifying talent, but it's also, you know, putting in a lot of infrastructure, a lot of more, not necessarily different manpower, although I think that is the case in certainly some positions, but a lot more manpower into developing and players in that development system. So, you know, it's an overhaul top to bottom that I think was needed. You know, I mean, I think that seems pretty clear at this point. And now it kind of feels like, you know, okay, so the Cardinals have, in terms of coaching staff, in terms of development staff, in terms of technology, scouting, I mean, complete overhaul here, added across the board, built out across the board. And now you've got a fresh base to build from with, you know, your big contracts out of the way. You've got this huge stockpile of young talent that is, you know, certainly not all of it is ready today. I mean, we're not going to see, you know, say Brandon Clark right, on opening day. But you've got this huge stockpile from which to build. And so, you know, it is kind of like we talked before about the Arenado trade, right, and kind of being like, yeah, man, it's over, you know, and that was just no fanfare or anything. The Donovan trade felt a lot more dim, you know. It was like, okay, this is really it, you know. But, you know, there is something to be said, I think, for having that fresh base to build from and, you know, a new era, new regime, you know, in terms of Bloom coming in and his guys coming in and kind of giving them a blank canvas on which to, you know, for the Cardinals' sake, hopefully paint a masterpiece. Although, you know, to your point, they may not all pan out. They may be finger painting. But listen, I've got finger paintings hung on my wall, so we're good.
Do you think who do you think fans latch on to? Like, who's going to be the player? Like, obviously, Brendan Donovan had, you know, he excited the fan base, his style of play, his, you know, his helmet flying off, his flowing locks, his bandana, all that stuff, his versatility. He personified a lot of that, you know, gritty, gutty Cardinal style, scrappy, plucky, you know, off the field involved, on the field, grew into the role of leading and, while not like not being involved in commercials everywhere or a star of the Cardinals commercials, you know, fans gravitated towards him. Who's that now?
Well, let me say first that I don't think you outright replace a Brendan Donovan in that way, right? I mean, you know, there's a kind of a unique perspective that comes with being, you know, the son of an Army veteran and, you know, the discipline and the hard work that comes with that. So I don't know that you replace that outright, but in terms of who fans will probably latch on to, you know, first of all, I think there are a couple of guys who are already on, you know, on the team, have played, you know, who have actually played at the MLB level, who are scrappy and who are plucky and already have, you know, maybe not to the same level as a Donovan, right, or an Arenado or a Gray or any of those guys that they've gotten rid of, but already have some of that going. There's a Mason Wynn, there's a Lars Nootbaar. Like Victor Scott has like a really passionate following, you know, around him. Burleson, I could see Burleson being that guy. Any of the 37 catchers, you know. But I'll tell you, the new player I think people will really rally around. And I like, you know, when Mason Wynn got called up, his jersey was like just so difficult to find because people were excited about him. I think Weatherholt's going to be that guy this year. I think, you know, no matter how he does, I think fans will rally around him. I mean, you know as well as I do, Cardinals fans are really great about embracing new talent, especially new homegrown talent. You know, and I think Weatherholt's going to be, I don't know if he'll be the guy, but I think he'll be a fan favorite from day one. I mean, don't be shocked if this kid gets a standing ovation, you know, when he takes the field on opening day.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up because I'm going to take a little tangent here, but that's what we do on BP.
I love detours.
We should get our tangents sponsored. So Mason Wynn debuted as a modern day September call up, right? The uh-huh. Not really many September call ups, not like there were, you know, 10 years ago, certainly not like there was when Stan Musial made his debut, that there's not the expanded rosters, all that stuff, right? But they wanted Mason Wynn to get an experience in the majors before being the everyday shortstop. They opted not to for many reasons with JJ Weatherholt not to do that. A large part of that is and then people will roll their eyes and get frustrated or whatever. But a large part of that is that they just wanted to have flexibility on the 40-man roster for things they're doing now, right? Yeah. Like they wanted to accumulate depth, and to do so by not locking in a 40 spot was a big deal for them. And it was a no deal for JJ Weatherholt. It wasn't really going to perceptibly change things except for giving an experience. But here's my question, right? What is the difference between debuting during the season and debuting on opening day? There does seem to be like some kind of jolt that sets those two apart, right?
You know, I don't know if it's any different for fans, like in the stadium, right? Like when a player makes his debut, I don't know if it makes any difference. But if I were a player, that would be a huge vote of confidence to me to be debuting on opening day. You know, with the way teams can manipulate service time and all that and have and you know, blatantly have done it, you know. And then on top of that, you know, the idea that teams can now be rewarded for not doing that, man, yeah. That's a huge confidence to say, hey, look, we have enough confidence in your abilities that we think you're, you know, you come up here in late March, make your debut on opening day, you're going to do well in rookie of the year voting. We have that much confidence in you, and we're going to, we're probably going to get benefit out of you coming, you know, here early. So to me, that would be a huge vote of confidence, on top of, you know, obviously the benefit of coming up earlier, starting your service time clock earlier and all that.
Yeah. But what, like, but also for fans, like, is there like the ceremonial aspect? You mentioned the standing ovation. Is the ceremonial aspect of it real?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I will say that, you know, the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance of opening day on its own, you know, I think adds to that. You know, you just kind of get in the spirit of it. You know, it's hard to not be more excited than any about any player, you know, not just a debuting player, but any player, any game when the Clydesdales come running across the warning track. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just a different atmosphere. So I don't know. I don't
That's
know.
A great point. Yeah. You don't get a car take you to the field if you debut in September.
Right. The Clydesdales aren't coming out. Ozzie Smith isn't hanging out with you. Okay, fair enough. He might be, but he definitely will be on opening day.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's just a different type of experience, and I imagine especially for an infielder, you know, especially one like a Weatherholtz who might end up at third base, but is possibly going to play second. Having that time with Ozzie Smith is going to be huge, man. I mean, that's got to be for him. You know, that's got to make that debut even sweeter.
I was asked on 101. WXOS here in town about the group of pitching prospects the Cardinals now have, and if it was the best that I'd seen. You know, I went back and looked. You know, in 2013, the Cardinals were the number one farm system. They pulled off the rare double, right? They had the National League pennant. They were in the World Series, and they had the top-rated farm system. You know, part of that top rated farm system was also why they won the pennant, because Michael Wacha was number six on their prospect list and their NLCS MVP. So he obviously pitched well. But like in that group, though, you also had Colton Wong, who would go on to win two gold gloves for the Cardinals. You had the late Oscar Tavares, who had his career cut tragically short when he and his girlfriend were killed in a drunk driving accident there in 2014. You had Carlos Martinez, who, you know, I mean, you look back at peak Carlos Martinez, you're talking about a guy who had a 3 ERA over the stretch of 60-some starts for 2 years, just had an electric sinker that we see everywhere in the game now, but did not see much back then, particularly not from that size of pitcher.
Yeah, my buddy Jordan is going to love that you gave Carlos Martinez that kind of shout out, because prime Carlos Martinez to him is like the best pitcher who ever lived.
Yeah. And very impressive.
That fight with us all the time. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Two-time all-star, you know, he was, you know, his career deteriorated with injuries and conditioning, and never threw another pitch in the majors after leaving the Cardinals, was with multiple other teams, but never got back to the majors. But you think back to 2013, and that group also included Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, that's some strong pitching that was already like surfacing in the majors for a pennant winner that had a lineup that was more like, you know, like you're used to the Cardinals having, right? Like the Matt Holliday, but it's still homegrown in the fact that it had Alan Craig, John Jay, Daniel Descalso was part of that, you know. So there was homegrown elements of a lineup that had been augmented by outside additions. And then you had this group of pitchers, and that was where the Cardinals just had such an edge. They just had power, accomplished, ready to go arms. And there was more on the way. And that was the top rated system. I think this group is not as, the game's changed so much. This group is not
very different groups. Yeah.
Yeah. This group is not as projectable as that group, meaning like there's a wider, delta, if I can use that word. There's a wider spectrum of outcomes from this group. Like you could see in the pitching group that they had in 2013 and on the way, this high floor and also a high ceiling, right? And I'm trying not to use hindsight to, I think you could see that at the time. They're like, well, these guys are going to play in the majors. It's just a matter of what do they get to, but they're going to contribute to the majors. This group has a wider bandwidth of outcomes, but more electric stuff just because of the game. This group is more modern, more electric, more power, more spin, more just at cutting edge, if you will, as a pitching group than the Cardinals have ever had.
Well, there's a lot of volatility with that, though. It kind of feels like that's what kind of where you're. And I don't just mean in terms of like how that talent pans out, but how once it actually gets there, like game results can be up and down. It feels like this group's ceiling may be higher, but its floor may be lower. And that's that kind of is what it feels like to me. Now, that said, you know, just watching and granted, you know, these guys, these aren't Cardinals guys. These aren't guys I've seen in person or anything like that. But just watching, you know, the highlight clips of some of these guys after the trades just to see, you know, what the Cardinals were getting. Man, Clark looks like something else, you know, when he's on. Sanja. Watching Sanja switch back and forth here and there, like certainly better as a right-hander. But, man, it's so interesting from both sides. And what could he – how could the Cardinals take advantage of that? You know, I mean, like – or could it disrupt his development? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like you said, it's, there's a lot of volatility – and a wide delta.
Delta, spectrum, series of outcomes. We can go with all the synonyms.
Yeah, well, and that's to say nothing of the guys that they've gotten in trades here recently that are not minors guys at this point, right? Like a Dobbins, you know.
Right.
Dobbins feel. I mean, you know, they're in this same class, right? But they don't feel like it for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, look, so. Ty Pete, the outfielder that the Cardinals got from Seattle in the three-team trade, and Gerangelo Sanja was number 7. He's a top 100 player according to Baseball America. But the list goes on from there. I mean, look, the list of players the Cardinals have acquired just since the All-Star break this past year is long. The list of pitchers, I mean, even if you go off waiver claims and, you know, or obviously the trades at the trade deadline, the draft was during the All-Star break, right? So these are players that would count in there. I mean, let me just once the top 30 from Baseball America gets kind of reworked to include Sanja and Pete, it's possible that 7 or 8 of the Cardinals' top 15 players will be added to the system in just the past, you know, 10 months, right? Consider this list. This is before the addition of the Mariners prospects. You have Brandon Clark, 6th. Yorker Fajardo, 11. Blake Aida, 30. Those three from the Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras deal, right? You have a Rule 5 pick in Matt Bouchard, who we don't, you know, kind of gets lost in all the acquisitions, but he could be a contributor in the major leagues this year. Liam Doyle, Tanner Franklin, Ryan Mitchell, Craig Crossland, Jake Arrieta. These guys were all drafted in this most recent draft. Doyle's 2, Franklin's 7. That's a strong and aggressive and entirely worthwhile ranking for him. He moves ahead of the guy drafted ahead of him, Ryan Mitchell, who's 13. Then you have a lefty, Cade Crossland, who, you know, because of Doyle and Franklin, probably doesn't get talked enough about, but he's 20. Emmanuel Luna, the international player they just signed, 16. By the way, 2 pitchers. Do you remember the trade they made with the Mets all those days ago for Ryan Helsley, the other all-star who was traded? 2 of those pitchers are in their top 30. You're talking about just a complete rewrite of how the industry not only sees their overall farm system, but sees their top 30. It's all not going to work out just because of the numbers, but are you big on the quantity game? Are you a big bulk buyer? Do you like the Costco prospect approach here?
Costco, I like that Costco prospect approach. That's a pretty good. I've not heard that before. I'm a fan of the many darts approach. I think there are teams certainly that are better at finding talent and developing talent. And so you can maybe get by without quite as many darts. And maybe the Cardinals become one of those teams with that build out and infrastructure like we've talked about. The past several years, I've not felt great about the development coming out of the Cardinal system. So, I think in that case, you know, if just going on recent history, I would lean toward a multiple darts approach and kind of hope to catch lightning in a bottle. But you know, I think that, you know, the way the game has changed, the way the understanding of just the minutia of the game has changed player development so much. I mean, and I don't just mean like in the past 50, 60 years. I mean, in the past 10, 15 years. I mean, it's really exploded. And so, you know, I think it's, I'm optimistic that this build out will be great for development, but I think the more, you know, if you're playing the Powerball and you buy one ticket, your odds are not great. You know, if you buy 10, they're still not great, but they are slightly better than they were before. And I think that to some degree, you know, with, you know, I think in sports, a lot of times there's this logic of, especially rebuilding teams, just getting the best player available. Any position doesn't matter. Just go get the most talent you can and figure it out later. And I kind of feel like that's where the Cardinals, you know, are, I don't know if they're at that point, you know, they're certainly not at the figure it out later point, but they are definitely at the talent collection point. And, you know, gathering as much, you know, best talent as they can, particularly when it comes to pitching, because pitching is, I mean, you know, as well as anybody, pitching is so volatile.
Especially
at the major league level. So it's, you know, to me, it's next guy up mentality for players. But, you know, I think in building out an organization, you kind of have to have that approach as you know, a GM or a president of baseball operations, whatever it is, that you need to have the next guy to be the next man up, you know.
Right.
So they've done a great job of collecting talent. And I think, you know, I think the many, many darts approach is the right approach, at least for now. Yeah.
You can get a lot from, you can get a lot of talent accumulation for being in a position where you don't necessarily need the talent to contribute right away. It can also really inform the type of talent acquisition, because you can take some reaches. You can go after a guy on waivers or in the Rule 5 who has a thing they do well, and see if you can add the other things that they need to contribute in the majors. But because they have that one thing that they do really well, you can kind of build off of that because you have the time, or you can see what they grow into, as opposed to the team that is like, oh, we need a contributor now. That one thing is great, but without something else, he can't contribute. You can make choices that are just slightly different that lead to where the Cardinals are at this point in time, which is they can add some of these players who are lottery tickets. They can add some of these players who have this one really great talent that they think they can nurture, or they think they can expand if they give it time. And, you know, that's something that the Cardinals haven't been in position to do before. This isn't just like runway and clearing, playing time and, you know, moving positions and everything like that. This stuff is happening beneath the surface, you know, and it really speaks to what can happen at Double A, where you can have more innings available to a guy who has a great slider and doesn't know how to land it for a strike. But dang, that the profile of that pitch is so good, you know, as opposed to giving those innings to a guy who, you know, has a sinker, you know, that sinker plays, you know, he's going to throw strikes, you know, you get a better defense in front of him. I mean, they can make different choices even downstream from the majors because of this, the adopted outlook that they have for the coming year.
Well, it's kind of like what you said earlier, where some teams in pursuing Donovan, one of the nice things about him being able to play so many positions is that you could get him, you know, now and then go play it. Left field, and if left field doesn't work out, then he can play there and you can go to second base or whatever.
Right.
it's a similar thing, you know. I think with these prospects is, you know, this guy's one thing doesn't work out, but this guy's does, and so on and so forth. It gives you an opportunity to pivot. One of the things too about, you know, those specialized talents or having those guys who maybe they just have one thing that they're great at, but aren't great at anything else. I mean, baseball's got specialists, you know, and I think I'm not saying you want to put all your eggs in the specialist basket by any stretch, you know, you don't want to 40 specialists on your 40 man, you know, but if you've got a guy who, you know, he throws a great slider and that's all he does, and you need a power lefty slider, you know, out of your bullpen or something.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, you know, there's benefit to that. So, you know, I think the approach, it's not just that they went out and grabbed every dart they could, right? They grabbed specific darts, the best ones that they could.
Yeah. And the traits that they can look for are different. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. They're different darts, but they're the best they could, you know, at least in their minds, the best that they can get, you know, in those given situations. So, you know, maybe I should walk back. I like the mini darts approach. Yeah, more darts, but it should be a targeted darts. It shouldn't just be, you know, like, I don't want the Cardinals signing my 7-year-old son just to have as many darts as they
can.
Like, I love him, but he's not ready, you know.
Yeah, he's got
3 more years before he's ready to be a pro.
Right, you want them to have a little bit more of a prerequisite than a pulse. Yeah, no.
That's a great way to say it. You're not just looking for bodies. You're looking for bodies with talent that you can develop. And I think they've done a great job. And I think that's illustrative in pretty much, and not just our stories. I mean, other stories too, that people have done about these prospects, like, oh, switch pitcher, Sanja, right? Like, that's the big thing that you see, you know, or you get fireballer in Clark. Like, you see these descriptors that come with them. Like, these guys have at least one skill that is defining that they have that we can work with. And they haven't necessarily said, hey, these are the others we want, but certainly that's the implication. So, yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And the flexibility it gives you for the future is, like I said, we talked earlier about, you know, a little light at the end of the tunnel. That feels like just a little more to me.
Well, this is the last time we'll talk before I head off to Florida. Spring training begins in earnest within 10 days. Spring training coverage begins in earnest from the Post-Dispatch within a week. We'll have 3 reporters down there, and nobody else locally makes that kind of investment, especially a day-to-day as far as the amount of stories. Plus, we'll have a photographer there. So videos, photos, stories, chats, podcasts, all sorts of things, unlike any other outlet in town, can provide from Jupiter and the Cardinals Roger Dean spring training player development complex, which will have a new look this year. So I'm eager to see that. That's something that I'm going to be looking forward to. It's not.
Will it be done, or is it? I thought it would still be just a little bit under construction by the time spring starts.
Oh, yeah, it'll be under construction throughout the whole next year. But the major league side and the parts that they need for spring are supposed to be mostly done. They expect some things not to be fully operational. Example would be like a brand new kitchen may not be fully, the larger ready to go kitchen may not be fully operational. There may be things that are added, the kitchen may not be done. I think the whole hitting setup is going to be done, and most of the pitching should be done. The Cardinals will have that pitching lab finally that they've talked about. As of this past week, there wasn't yet access to it. So that's in the coming days they want it to be. But it's supposed to be functional. They don't expect to live out of tents. They do expect to maybe eat in tents and everything and have those then go down over time. But, you know, it's not the modern overhaul that they wanted. It's come in at more expensive than they wanted because of the delays. But it has a different look. I mean, there's more building. People will notice the difference. There's just going to be more places for develop, more setups like geared towards a place for hitters to go, force plates, mocap, all that stuff that they just have not had around that will all be there. Their hope is to be a facility where players can go and get the things that they've been chasing at, private businesses and stuff. The Cardinals want to have a lot of that available to their players. And, we'll see that. I'm looking forward to it. I think that just like from a physical standpoint, I'm eager to see how that plays out. From a scheduling standpoint, I'm really fascinated by what Daniel Descalso, the bench coach and manager, Ali Marmol, what they and the staff set up for kind of the structure of spring. There is not the veteran position player around for everybody to watch. There's going to be the players with the most experience are the coaches, Jay and Daniel Descalso. I'm really eager to see how much of this spring is teaching, how much of this spring is competition, how much of this spring is, scrappy attitude that and I'm sure we're going to hear it, underestimate them at your own peril. I want to know how much of this spring is, this is the style of play. This is the style of play that the Cardinals have to compete, and the style of play will serve them as the talent arrives. I'm really eager to see like that tone and how that's reflected in the schedule. What are some things you're looking for?
So the first thing that I want to see Weatherholt. I mean, I want to see what he does. I mean, he tore up AA and AAA last year. He's going to be given a fair shot to earn the job. And to be honest with you, I don't know that it will take much for him to earn it. But I would love to see him kind of really take ownership of that and really take off with the opportunity. The other thing, though, is that, you mentioned there's no veteran players for anybody to watch, at least not to the degree that there used to be. I would love to see who, we know the coaching staff is going to be take charge and take the lead. I would love to see which players begin to take the lead, some of that veteran leadership out of the way. No more Arenado, no more Gray, no more Contreras, no more Donovan. Who steps up into that role of, on field leader with some of those guys?
I wonder how that's a great question. Like, how will that manifest in spring? The competition in spring is so interesting because obviously there are games and they keep score and everything like that. But like the number of hits JJ Weatherholt has isn't going to change whether he gets on the major league. So what his batting averages or on base percentage isn't going to tell us if he's in the opening day lineup just any more than the number of, extra base hits Alec Burleson has. It's going to tell us whether or not he's taking over the lead of the lineup or, I guess if there's one place on the field where you could see that manifest, it's with Ivan Herrera.
I would love that.
All right, what's he bring as a catcher? And I think fans who tune into some of the games, if they get a chance to see Leo Bernal, you will see a catcher who commands beyond his years. Like, you will see that. Yeah. What Herrera brings behind the plate, and if there's confidence and there's a response from the young pitchers to him, that's where I think you might see that show up on the field. But I wonder how, away from the field, you'll start to see that, leadership take place. I think, Mason, with what he says privately and publicly, you might see that. I think JJ Weatherholt, the way he carries himself, I think you're going to see some players older and younger gravitate towards him. I think Vic Scott will be very interesting in that regard as well. That's something else to watch for. Is there a position battle of interest to you? I can set it up. Like, who's the closer?
Yeah, so closer would be a big one. I would be interested if they'll try Romero there. I know sometimes teams are hesitant to go with a lefty closer for a couple of reasons, but that would be one I'd be watching. Catcher, I mean, you mentioned catcher. We've got 37 catchers, who are capable at this point. So, is Herrera's arm set up? Is he ready to go? You know, do the pitchers respond to him, or do they better respond to Pajes or Crooks or, you know, Bernal, to your point? Like, where does that go? The thing I'm most interested in seeing is where Gorman and Weatherholt end up, you know, whether that's
second or
third. That's one of them on the bench, whether that's maybe Weatherholt starts in AAA. I don't know. But that would be the primary thing I would be watching is second and third and how that shakes out. But I'm also interested in, you know, whoever, if and when they bring in this extra bat, presumably in the outfield, you know, there's somebody's going to be left out there, you know, and I'm interested to see who that is. It's not going to be Nootbaar. Scott feels like he's done enough, at least defensively, to have a spot. So where do we shake out with the rest, you know?
Well, Jordan Walker's going to be out there.
Yeah, so that was kind of my thought, was who's out? Is it Walker or is it the extra bat?
No, it'll be Jordan. Jordan Walker will be out there. And the Cardinals, I mean, right now, when you look at them, they don't have a DH.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could – I mean, I guess Gorman could be the DH, Thomas Sejesi in the field. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go with that, but
it's that flexibility that we've talked about. It's right. That option. You
know? Yeah, so I mean, unless Herrera is the DH, then he's the DH, and Pajes is behind the plate, which is how it sets up right now. If Nootbaar's not ready, then is Herrera in left field? I mean, there's a lot of different ways they could go, but they don't really have like that. They have playing time. With Pajes behind the plate, Herrera somewhere, or Herrera behind the plate, they have playing time for a right-handed bat without dislodging Jordan Walker, who they really want to commit to. I'll end here, and it's not. I mean, I would like to get your thoughts on it, and it's not like it's not a 30-second answer, so I'll warn you away. What do you want them to do with the manager? And the staff this spring. What do you think? Is the right thing for Heim Bloom and for ownership to do? What do you think they ought to do? And what are the factors that play into that? He's entering the final year of his contract. This is not the roster might have more shape and more clarity than in recent years. But this is not a year where they're like, well, you know, you're going to be judged on how much you win. Or is it? Like, I think it's a very fascinating spring. You know, they've had talks about a contract extension. Heim Bloom has been very candid about how much he's enjoyed the relationship that has grown between him and Ollie Marmol, one that really wasn't there until this past year when both of them really made a conscious effort, and rightfully so. I mean, they should. They're going to work together, but made such an effort to like see where they were connected, and to see if they had common goals, to see if they, you know, had some resonance with the direction they were going, and how they saw things. You know, Heim. They both tell the story about how Bloom walked into his office a year ago in spring training and said, "No manager and baseball has a tougher job than you because you have to answer to two president of baseball operations." So at least he kind of like, that was his way of kind of like trying to unplug the tension of it. Like, this isn't an audition for me and a chance to stick with Mozeliak. That's not how to go with this. You know, and it was humor to kind of, you know, break the tension, but now they're in it. Now they're together. There are plenty of examples. There are a handful of them where Bloom is like, well, give me a year. Let's see how this goes. I want to see how this goes. And then I might change things in a year. Like, let's see how we work together. There are examples of that out there. Do you think be one, or is there something a little bit different about what they should do this spring?
You know, so this spring, I don't know that there's anything different to do. Right. Okay. Like, other than give Marmol an extension now.
You think that's right? That's the right thing to do?
I don't know. So let me back up and say this first. I think there's a very clear difference between a good manager and a bad manager. I think that's very obvious to a fan, but I think a lot of guys in the middle, fans may not be able to tell the difference. And to be honest with you, I can't sometimes myself. They seem like interchangeable parts. I think Marmol is a good manager. I think there's evidence for that, and that the Cardinals, even in the recent downstretch, have kind of outperformed projections. I like the way, generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, he runs his bullpen and utilizes his lineup. And so I would say that Marmol is a good manager. I think that it is wise to keep a good manager. And I also think that if you don't think that you'll be competitive in 2027, assuming there's baseball in 2027, that there is probably some benefit in continuity, holding on to Marmol at least another year past this year, maybe two. Yes, you reevaluate after this season. Maybe that's when you make either there's an extension or you go different ways. I probably wouldn't do it in the spring. Handling negotiations during spring training, and he's trying to run a camp, and it doesn't seem like a good idea. But to me, I would keep Marmol at least for a little while longer with these guys, and then if you want to reevaluate down the line once you've got some of them coming up. You know, in terms of his staff, there's this real hard push to get Yadi Molina in the dugout every day. Online and in various circles. And so maybe that's where we end up eventually, is something like that. Spring, certainly wouldn't be the case.
No.
But yeah, I think it's in terms of like the main, the actual manager, I would, if it were me, if I were making the call, I would make it after this season, and I would probably, assuming this season goes as the past several have gone, and, we outkick our coverage and, do the things that kind of have been happening, stay the course, at least in terms of that, then yeah, I would probably re-up for, two or three years after that, and then see where you're at once your core is really ready. But to be honest with you, I don't know that there's, there are managers out there I would maybe rather have than Marmol, but like, it's kind of dependent on like who's available at the time to me. There's nobody right now that like, and granted we're so far in the cycle right in February that like, it wouldn't matter, but there's nobody right now that I would outright go, okay, I would rather have this guy than Marmol. Like, this is a clear, better manager out there who's actually available and a realistic option. So, it's kind of one of those things where like, I don't know how much better you could realistically do within a year. And you've already entrusted him this much with coaching and development. And these guys, as far as I can tell, all seem to take pretty well to him. So I probably would stay the course, assuming everything, goes the way you think it's going to go.
Do you think it matters at all for a young team that's saying, all right, we're competing, we're going to try to make the most of this year, but we're also competing to be part of some future group, to look towards the leader of the dugout and go, well, that guy might not be there.
In terms of like working under a 1-year contract, are you talking about like locking them up so the players have a little more?
If you're JJ Weatherholt or you're Josh Baez or you're these players who are playing toward being part of a standout team in 2028, 2029, do you think it matters at all that the guy who's leading you in 2026, you go out, he might not be around? Or do you think that's not a factor?
I think it matters for some guys. I think it doesn't matter for others. There are guys who, they very much approach baseball as a business. They're going to work with some guys, and some guys are going to go work elsewhere. And that's having a job,
Right.
How many people have I worked with in my career who have gone on somewhere else, and bosses and, everything else. So I think that, for some guys, certainly, they will go, oh, this, there is a cloud over this, as they said, Moneyball, cloud over a manager with 1 year, 1 year contract. But,
right.
At the end of the day, I think it's a business and needs to be approached as such in terms of those kinds of relationships. Like, certainly, yes, if I love this manager and he's my guy, but when the new guy comes in, you still have to go to work. I think it matters, from a personality perspective, and certainly, on an individual player basis, but in terms of like a long-term, view, certainly by the front office,
right.
I would not be concerned about that at all, but I can certainly understand how others would maybe feel that way.
That is Nathan Mills, editor at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. I'm off to Florida, Nathan. So we'll find out, Lucky. Please. Yeah, well, we'll be in touch a lot, so I'll tell you all about it. The next time I join you for the podcast and for the video, my backdrop will be less books and more sun. So there you go. That'll be good, right?
Get a little palm tree in there or something for me too.
I will. Yeah. I'll find one, and you know, you can maybe we'll do like a backdrop of the construction behind me or something.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, like a little the palm trees coming up behind the cranes. That'll be nice.
Yeah. That would be quite a look.
Yeah.
All right. I'll look for that. Yeah. I'll do that. The best podcast in baseball will, of course, continue through spring training. We'll start the, what are we at, 14th season. 14th. The 14th season of the best podcast in baseball will drop soon. This is kind of like the finale. I feel like we didn't do a good job of planning a cliffhanger.
No, and I'll be honest with you. I'm a little disappointed that you brought me on for the season finale. Like, I feel like you could have gone bigger for a season finale. You know,
I think I want to go bigger for this. No, I can't go bigger than you. I do have some ideas for the season premiere for 14 for what to do. We'll see if I pull it off. But if you have recommendations, man, for 14, let me know. Same for the listeners. The podcast is only as good as the community that has kept it supported through 13 years and into the 14th. I mean, the fact that it's still going, you know, podcasts come and podcasts go, and many, many, many podcasts have surfaced, you know, in the years since we started this, Bernie Miklas and I, and, you know, this one keeps going strong, and that's only possible because of the listeners out there who continue to support it. I like to remind myself that we're not just talking to ourselves here, which is good. But we need, you know, but we have to be responsive to feedback too. So what people want to hear, what people want to see, ooh, there's something. We'll have to add that. We're doing more video, so it will be what people want to see. In season 14, I'd love to hear from folks. So you can leave a review or email me, or, you know, heck, drop Nathan an email there. Welcome to the bid. There.
Oh, great.
Yeah. nmills@post-dispatch.com. There you go.
I can't wait to get the emails about how loud my voice is. And like, oh, I hate that other. Quit bringing that guy on here. He's the worst.
Yeah. Someone else should share in this fun. So the best podcast in baseball brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. It's also available with all the Constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. Off to Florida, where year after year after year, the Post-Dispatch continues to provide just blanket coverage of spring training, more coverage, more content, more exclusive stories, and more multimedia event, you know, content for readers than any other St. Louis outlet. And really, you know, at a time when papers and media outlets around the country are relying on either no coverage or coverage at a distance, it's remarkable that the Post-Dispatch continues to invest in baseball coverage and spring training coverage. You know, Daniel Guerrero will be down at spring training along with me for the full pull, as we used to call it, and Benjamin Hockman, Lynn Worthy, they'll be down there. We'll also have a photographer. So lots to come, and it's a testament to the fact that subscribers support it and that subscribers want it, and we realize that we have to respond to their investment, and the Post-Dispatch has with not missing a beat on baseball coverage. That's the goal. So let's see if we can do it for another spring.
I'm excited. My favorite time of year is here. Spring training begins. Baseball season's off and running. I'm good for like the next 7 months.
All right. Well, we'll have plenty to talk about. That's for sure.
Hey, if we're going to set a record for most podcast episodes in this season, we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, no pressure. All right. We'll see.
But I want the record, Derek.
Well, we like crushed the record this past year. I mean, we got like 40 episodes.
Do it again.
I do need to sleep, man.
I don't.
Okay.
just stay awake forever like I do.
I'll try to do that. All right. So palm trees and stay awake forever. I mean, Crux coffee is good. So, I mean, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in Florida.
There you go.
Talk to you from Jupiter.